Welcome to Leaders and Legends of Online Learning, a podcast dedicated to the experts. Thank you for listening. Each episode, we'll be learning from the world's leading thinkers and practitioners in online learning and linking to ideas relevant to online teaching, working with online learners, and digital education. You can listen to the experts and check their profiles and link to some of their work on our website, www.onlinelearninglegends.com. I'm Mark Nichols, the interviewer in this episode. You'll meet Professor Antonio Teixeira in this episode. Antonio is a professor at the Universidade Aberta, the Portuguese Open University. He's also a senior fellow and recent president of EDEN, and he joined me via Skype from Lisbon. Antonio has been involved in some impressive online and distance education projects, as you'll hear from this conversation. Antonio, it's wonderful to be able to talk with you, and you are indeed a legend of online learning. I'm looking forward to this conversation with you.
Well, thank you, Mark. Let me just start by saying that I don't see myself as a legend, but thank you anyway. It would be a pleasure.
Wonderful. Well, Antonio, just to start us off, can you give us a brief overview of your career and publications?
My career started in distance education 30 years ago, more or less. Actually, I started at the Open University of Portugal in 1989. My first task was linked with directing programs or TV programs and radio programs, educational programs, so as resources supporting the learning process at that time. Starting from 91, I've become a teacher at the university and have been at the Open University ever since. From 2006 to 2009, I was a pro-rector at the university and was in charge at the process of transformation from a traditional paper-based distance education model to a fully online one. That was an important aspect in my career. Apart from it, I was also present at the European Distance Education Network 2013 to 16, actually. I was vice president there. And that was also a very interesting opportunity to work with the community in a broad scale, not just in Europe, but also with other regions in the world. But apart from that, while I teach distance education at university, well, my basic training is in philosophy, and I still do research in philosophy. And my main topics have been the topics related to open education, open educational resources and practices in the first stage, then also MOOCs when they started. And also research on virtual mobility and other topics related with open education.
Great. So throughout your career then, you've gone from a media producer through to a change agent, distance education researcher, theorist and practitioner. That's quite a mix. You've also got a very broad set of international connections, including one in New Zealand with Massey University.
Yes, that's true. It was also a fortune. I had the chance of working with colleagues from all over the world, actually, from Asia, from Oceania, in a sense, Australia, New Zealand, but also a lot with Latin America, also with Africa. As you may know, the Open University of Portugal has a high number of its students' population comes from Latin America and Africa. And so we are already very much accustomed in a sense to have a broader approach to the topics and an experience of collaboration with other regions. And that has been also happening not just in the Portuguese-speaking world and Spanish-speaking world, but also the English-speaking world as well.
So, Antonio, you've got years of experience and research to draw from for this next question. But over the years, the ideas and themes that your work has provided, there must be some which you still think are very, very pertinent today and are still perhaps as fresh today as they were when you first wrote them. In fact, even some of your more recent work on MOOCs is being widely read. So what are some of the themes and ideas that your work has provided that are still pertinent for you today?
Probably some have to do with with the approach on online learning and also the approach on institutional transformation. One of the most important aspects that still are a hot topic today is how institutions adjust and embrace open education and online learning as well? Or can we also use the different perspective, online learning and open education? Anyway, the approach to institutional transformation has still being debated. Most of the experiences that I've been following are not very systematic, don't use an holistic approach, and probably that is still something that is important from my past experience, especially linked with the transformation process at the Open University, is to have this broad understanding, englobating vision, holistic approach to institutional transformation. Also, in that aspect, is important concern about training. One of the innovations that we used here at the Open University in the process was to devise a training process which was immersive and imply that everyone in the institution, all the teaching staff, independently of their academic ranks, should be subject to immersive training using the same pedagogical approach that they're going to apply as teachers themselves. Mm-hmm. And that no online teacher could be an online teacher without prior having an experience as an online student.
Mm, brilliant.
Another aspect has to do with the cultural clash between an open perspective on teaching and learning and a closed one, in a sense. So many of the institutions, colleagues and practitioners are applying open education in closed settings. And we're still finding these confusions when we're addressing topics as MOOCs. The importance of using the right concepts, understanding what are the dimensions of an open environment. And it has always been an important aspect in my reflection, and I think it's still valid today. There are other aspects versus my research on virtual mobility. I tend to see that we're still having projects and attempts at trying to actually escalate them, but it's always the same problems. And it seems that we're always having the same difficulties. So in that sense, yeah, I mean, the lessons that I've learned 10 years ago are still valid today as well. Mm-hmm. Apart from it, there are also elements which I think are very much valid from what we've been discussing some years ago. For instance, 10 years ago, we didn't have the notion of the impact that social learning was going to have, especially social media. We could understand the implications of a network environment. We couldn't anticipate the impact, the tremendous impact that social network has had in our societies, in our ways of communication and so on. But independent from it, some of the perceptions that we had 10 years ago, which are reflected in my own writings as well, are still valid today. Other aspects involved, the importance, of course, of human interaction when we're having ever more to think about also the introduction of automatic processes and artificial intelligence and so on. But the importance of the human element is still very much critical. Mm-hmm. And the human tutoring and how we prepare them, how we prepare our colleagues to play those facilitation roles as well.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of your immersive approach. I think it certainly develops a sense of empathy in those who are offering the online education. So what does success look like in terms of openness? I mean, people interpret the term in various ways. What's your take on what a successful open university would be doing?
Well, to change an open university is a little bit different from changing a conventional university in that sense, because there are already some cultural elements present. Those elements and those basic concepts are there, although the way that you interpret them and actually involve them in your work imply an important change. But back then, when we started that process, the Open University of Portugal had an experience of over 10 years or 15 years almost at that time of open education. But it was very much perceived as more like a massification of access than actually an openness of the learning process and the teaching process. Yeah. So in that sense, you can say, and this is probably one of the most important aspects in my reflection throughout the years, is the critical importance of having a cultural approach to these processes. The culture of openness implies that teachers, our colleagues and tutors and the students themselves as well, understand the difference between working in a closed environment, in a community which they can control, which they know everyone, in which they can anticipate the moves and reactions from the other peers, in a sense, to a different environment in which you cannot control everything, and you should be able to embrace any contribution that could come out in the process. So anyone who is not a teacher, who is not a student, can meddle with your teaching, can enter your classroom, can say something and go and leave. All of these aspects which are difficult to include in a formal setting, this is very hard to include in the process. But it is important to include them. It's a part of a changing process, a broad changing process, but it's a cultural approach that has to change. You can change many things in a short time, and we have done that. I mean, the entire transformation of the Portuguese Open University just basically took 3 years. But it's very difficult to change people's minds. There is also a décalage, as the French would say, between the changing of institutional practices and the changing of the institutional frame of mind and our colleagues' frame of mind as well.
Yes.
This is one of the challenges that we face. And it also means that when institutions enter changing processes, the difficulty here is to understand that this is a continuous process and not just change in one moment to include one new technology or whatever, and that stops. And that is the most difficult aspect of this process and deals with a cultural change of mind.
Right. So the cultural change is arguably still going on then at your university.
Yes, clearly. And it's something that is a challenge every day. So, and it's not just a challenge for a particular generation. You find also that as new generations come aboard, they're also having to enter this process. We're used to this approach by Prensky, but it's not that simple. Even the new generations that are already born in this new environment, they have to face these cultural challenges that we were talking about.
That's very interesting. So the online environment then gives rise to more pedagogical flexibility. As you said earlier, you must be open to other people injecting what they have to offer into your class. So it does require something quite different from educators, doesn't it? You can't just tell people things anymore. You've also got to be able to facilitate them sharing their own ideas together.
Yes, and I would say that probably today the biggest challenge is to try to combine this flexibility that we're talking about with scalability as well, but also with personalization. And the fact that everyone is different and requires a different approach and has also to be included in a way a co-owner. They have to take ownership of the process itself. So this is something that has been building up through the last years, and I think it is a very exciting transformation to try to combine these three elements.
Coming back to something you said earlier too, which really connected with me, you mentioned when you went through the change process with the university, you took a very holistic approach. So it was like you weren't just seeking to apply technology, you were seeking to actually change the institution. It's quite a different approach, isn't it? As opposed to sort of bolting on different technological approaches. You're talking about almost a heart transplant of the university itself.
Yes, because it was almost as ambitious as that. In many of the colleagues at the university then, they look at this process as almost a re-foundation of the university. Because not that we change completely our mission statement or values, but there were a lot of critical transformations that changed dramatically the way we not just operate, but the way we see our mission as well and understand it and interpret it. In our case, when we designed the process, we combined, first of all, we've tried to focus on this aspect of transforming also to improve quality. So the community understood that we needed to change the way we operated in order to improve the quality of what we were doing. So improve the quality of our services to students, and especially the learning process. But on the other hand, so it not just changed the way that you proceed with your students, and not just the the practice itself. It's also to change the university in how it operates, it organizes, how the infrastructure is managed, how the services operate, how the research is done, how you actually transfer the results of research to your practices, how you evaluate that, is also how you communicate with the students, is also how you involve the community. Well, it's a very broad approach, and you have to involve everything on it. One probably critical element as well in this process was that we designed this in order to accelerate the process. We've involved everyone in the university in an array of different projects. So over 20% of the staff were involved in concrete projects. Mm. Apart from it, everyone was involved on training activities or whatever, involved in this process, and everyone took ownership of this change, and were involved in the many aspects that are linked with transforming an institution, from the pedagogical model design to the implementation of a new research structures, to the change of the portal, well, to the change of how the students can be involved in the participate in the process and all of this. That is something that I think it's also interesting. We're seeing nowadays, and we can see also this in other kinds of institutions, as museums, for instance. I think museums are doing a wonderful job of transforming themselves as well. We can see how it would be our students or learners are having an increased participation in the process of managing the institution as well, and managing their own learning processes. There are being ever more peers in the co-design of the process.
Yeah.
It's also interesting that at the same time, whereas as our society is changing, and we are also seeing a growing trend of mistrust towards institutions, most of your students are also having a mistrust of the institution itself, and are forming their own networks of peers and so on. And that is something that has also to be tackled by the institution itself, how it reconnects with society and the communities in this new environment, in this social and cultural environment.
Mm, that's really fascinating. I'm reminded too of Maureen Kearsley, who talk about taking a systems approach for distance education. You've applied the same principle to your online transformation there in Lisbon, which is fantastic. I'm going to ask a very detailed question, Antonio. Print. So the Open University, Portuguese Open University, used to rely on print and used to use a lot of media. So you're actually employed under that basis. What is the role of print now in the university?
In the initial model that the university used, print was the basic resource used, right? Mm. So there was also a major production of media, especially video. Well, TV at first, and then video. In our case, radio and audio were never too much important. But when we changed to the online environment, the importance of print was lost, but not the importance of writing, because the way that the courses were designed depended a lot on writing. And so there was the possibility to take that move from one medium to the other, but the basic thing, which was writing, reading, remained as a major part of the experience of both teaching and learning. As for the media, there was a moment in which the use of media lost a bit of importance, but then it was it regained it clearly in the last years again with the impact of social media. And now we're seeing the trend ever more on that direction. So of course, institutionally speaking, there was an adaptation, which was not easy, which led also to some difficulties, of course, because the initial plan was to transform, because we had a very large facilities and services, meat production, and they had to change to a different kind of mission. And the initial plan was not fully implemented, also because at that point, the understanding of how media was going to be important and relevant, still relevant in the coming years, was not fully perceived. Yeah. So this is the problem that sometimes you have. I mean, you can have a very consolidated vision, but sometimes the ones that are with you, the community, the institutions, they don't share it in the same way. So there was this difficult adaptation. But anyway, now, of course, it's clear that the university has, the community at large are looking at the use of media in a very critical way, and even more critically than in the first decades of the university. Of course, now in a different way, because this is produced by everyone. We don't need big facilities, and it's not centralized, but media is still very important, or it's becoming very important again.
Thanks, Antonio. A wonderful overview of the work that you've done. And I mean, it's no wonder that you're a legend based on the success you've had and the challenges you've faced. So at the present time, as we talk, it's mid-2018. There are still quite a few open universities seeking to reposition themselves into the online world. What are your observations about online learning and education at the present time, mid-2018? What are the key themes that you see as relevant?
Well, of course, open universities now are facing challenges which are basically different from 20 years ago or 10 years ago. One major challenge is the fact that we are not operating alone in the system. 20 years ago, even some 10 years ago, you could say that the major contributors to the sector were the open universities, in Europe in particular. This has changed dramatically, so now you have almost every institution, at least in higher education, but not only on that sector, to use online learning and at least a technological enhanced learning approach. So one new element for the open universities has been the fact that they have to reposition themselves in a sense in which they are not the full providers in the sector. But the basic mission still remains the same. So to be able to reach out for target groups that are not having easy access to quality learning opportunities in higher education and the other sectors as well. So this remains a challenge, the populations at risk and all of this. 10 years ago, it was already clear for us. It's interesting to note that when we addressed the issue, we could already identify that although countries as Portugal, as the others in Europe, there was no major restrictions to access to higher education, a large amount of the population, especially the ones who were already having a job and working 9 to 5 and all of these, they were facing many difficulties in actually having access to a quality higher education opportunity, learning opportunity. So we're already serving those target groups, even if they were not typical target groups. But a very critical element for us has been as well, and I know for the other open universities in Europe, to internationalize. So at the Open University of Portugal, at this stage, we can say that over 20% of our student populations already, that institutions have to understand that they're operating in a multicultural environment.
Yeah.
And it implies also cultural change for your staff and your practices as well. Scalability continues to be a big challenge for us in a different way, for instance, in Europe, as it is in Asia, for instance. In those countries, for instance, as India, the cost of the education delivery is paramount. Mm. So the use of technology is based on how much it costs, in a sense. So that's why in many of those countries, use of print and so on is still very much important. In Europe, scalability is seen more as a challenge for the use of artificial intelligence and technology. I do see open universities at large, but you're talking now in European setting, as clearly having a mission and a place and a role, which is different from the other institutions in the system. And that is a critical element. So you're only relevant as an open university if you're different from the conventional universities. And that difference sometimes has been lost in many institutions. That's a mistake. But independently from, I would say that the coming years will prove, and are already proving in some way, that open education institutions, not just universities, have a specific role. because we're having also in Europe at this stage new societal challenges, which imply the capability of responding very quickly at a large scale and with quality. And this is a clear opportunity for dedicated institutions as open universities.
Mm. So there's a lot of opportunities for open universities at the moment, but also quite a few challenges too, just reading into your answer there, yeah. Which sort of leads us nicely into the next question. So now that we are facing these conditions as open universities and online learning is progressing in a particular way, what is the sort of research you'd most like to see done at the moment?
Well, one that which is directly connected with this discussion is the one that manages to develop new ways of teaching and learning, which keep the quality of the experience, but allows for scalability. So allows for decrease in the amount of time, for instance, that tutor or human tutoring and the teaching is required. One of the traditional mistakes that most institutions and, well, the staff, the teaching staff, usually one of the typical mistakes when they're starting to use e-learning and online learning is that they think this is going to decrease their amount of work time. It's exactly the opposite, you know. And so many in their first experiences become a little bit demotivated because they say, oh, this is taking much more time than I expected. So what's the use? It's exactly the opposite. Of course, it generates a new kind of experience, which is much more intense, much more, if it is designed correctly, much more active, interactive, and also lively. And how does it escalate? So this is something that still needs to be researched. Another aspect which I think requires still a big investment from research is on higher level skills, in a sense. So deeper knowledge and all of this. So how can we improve the practices in that sense as well? Openness is still a challenge in many ways. So this is still something that the research has to focus on, the different dimensions of involved in this. And because it also links with a new emerging trend, which is to unbundle certification. And so all of these new way that we're looking at how learning is being certified and how people build their own portfolios of diploma. Well, now it's not no longer a diploma, it's a bundle of different micro-accreditations. So this is also an emerging trend. So the impact of big data, the use of intelligent agents in our learning processes, how they can actually improve and enhance the quality of the learning process, and in a way that meets this combination of the three elements that I've just identified before, flexibility, scalability, and personalization. Because I think this is the challenge that we're addressing, the combination of the three. It's possible to combine the three in a good way, and that is a big challenge. Of course, when we're talking about open education as a topic of research, we should now also look at it in a broader sense of the cultures of openness, which include, of course, open science, open innovation, open access, and all of this. So this is not just a standalone topic. It's a part of a very large research endeavor, and I think we should also take this broader view when they're considering their research project.
They're tremendously big themes, Antonio. And I think it just reminds me that we are living in very, very interesting times in terms of TEL. That there's a lot of potential, there's a lot of unknowns, there's a lot of excitement, I think, that we'll see over the next few years.
Clearly, I mean, these are very exciting times, and of course, the challenges are very complex. But on the other hand, this is a moment in which education is very much on the center of everyone's concerns, not just politicians, but society in general. And open education and decent education is on the mainstream of that concern as well.
Great, thanks, Antonio. And look, you're clearly a legend of online learning, which means you've been influenced by others, and you also have an important view as to someone whose perspective has been influencing you recently. So can I ask then, for two people you'd recommend as legends of online learning?
Well, it's difficult to name just two, but I'll try to do it. So, of course, we should not, when we're talking about online learning, we should not forget the founding fathers in the sense of distance learning theory, and especially the ones who are closer to us, like people like Holmberg, like Otto Peters, like Michael Moore. And I mean, coming from an experience of an open university, I have to feel quite influenced by their work, by their messages as well. Mm. Especially in my case with Michael Moore, which I've been closer to. Apart from it, of course, from a more objective point of view, I would say that the one who have influenced me the most was Tony Bates. It's someone who has managed, apart from everything, remains relevant in the field for a period of, I don't know, 40 or 50 years, which is really amazing. And he's still very much updated in that sense. He's still very much a reference. And he has been the continuous source of inspiration and support. And I have to name him, and probably the one who has more influenced me the most. But of course, there have been also other colleagues who have influenced part of my approach to the field. People as, of course, as Alan Tate and others who I've worked with. And in order not to be unbalanced, for instance, I have to also name Robin Mason, whose influence was critical in the way that we've designed our transformation process in the 10 years ago. She was, of course, a true pioneer of online learning. As others, as Morten Paulsen, for instance, which is a dear friend, a master in a sense. But it's also important to point out that in other regions of the world, there are other very important people that sometimes we miss in the international community because of the language barrier. And I would point out, for instance, in the Spanish-speaking world, someone as Lorenzo García Recio, which is someone who has been quite influential in the transformation of distance education and online learning practices, especially in the Spanish-speaking world. And of course, there are others. I don't want to be forgetting anyone in particular. But let me just finish by, instead of looking at the legend who is already established, also to a future legend, I would identify someone as Cristóbal Cobo, as someone who is contributing a lot with new ideas and has been a challenge for me as well as a researcher to follow him.
Thank you, Antonio. It's been wonderful talking with you. I've learned a tremendous amount, and I'm actually quite impressed by what you've done there in terms of transforming an open university. It takes a lot of effort. So well done. Antonio, you're certainly a legend of online learning. I really appreciate your time with me this afternoon.
Well, thank you very much, Mark. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
You can find Antonio's profile and links to his research from our website. His Twitter handle is Antonio Teix. That concludes this episode. Be sure to go to our website, www.onlinelearninglegends.com, to follow up on this episode's guest. You'll also find links to others whose ideas continue to inspire and teach online learning professionals, and you can subscribe to future interviews. If you know of a leader or legend we've not yet talked to, please do drop us a line at onlinelearninglegends@gmail.com.